This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome to the program. In a couple of moments here, I'm going to tell you I have this huge fear for today. And if you heard the 32 Thoughts podcast that came out this morning, you might know what I'm talking about. And it involves my voice. And it involves a guest that I've wanted to talk to for a long time. Going to get there in a second. Welcome to the program. What a crazy night that was for hockey. And specifically, what a crazy 15 minutes that was between the Penguins and also the Detroit Red Wings, certainly. The Washington Capitals, the Philadelphia Flyers. Like, everything within, like, 15 minutes just went boom. It was kind of like that day where we had, you know, the Stamkos signing and Shea Weber got traded for PK Subban. It was like everything all of a sudden just happened all at once. Bam, Taylor Hall trade. It was like bam, 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 bam. Just speed bagging, right? So that was a wonderful night of hockey last night. We're going to talk about a lot of it here with Elliot Friedman in a couple of seconds and try to move the Arizona Coyotes story a little bit further. And if you heard the podcast that came out again this morning, like, people in Arizona are, to be blunt, pissed. Like, legit, from the players to the staff to, I would imagine, coaches. Like, a lot of players and people around the team were kept in the dark for a long, long time and were led to believe one thing while another was going on behind the scenes. This story is far from over. And if there weren't already trust issues with Alex Murillo, there certainly are now, and it's only a matter of how bad does it get. We'll get into that coming up in a couple of moments. Also, big night in college hockey yesterday. It'll be BC and Denver in the final. Congratulations to those two teams. Mike McMahon, publisher of the College Hockey Insider newsletter, senior writer for College Hockey News, will stop by at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about the Frozen Four. Also, we'll have some conversation about the future of the NCAA-CHL relationship, as we've talked about for months now here on this program and on the podcast as well, as it seems this is marching towards an inevitability where CHL players will one day, probably sooner than later, be allowed to play college hockey. So we'll get there with Mike McMahon. Now, here's my fear. I've got Joe Watson coming up in hour two. He is a former NHL defenseman, broke in with the Boston Bruins, was picked up by the Philadelphia Flyers, and then finished his career with Colorado, the Rockies. So he's written a new book, and it's excellent. I mean, first of all, I'm a sucker for that era of hockey. I'm also a sucker for that hockey team specifically, which I find to be one of the most interesting teams in the history of the game. You know, my first memory of watching an NHL game involved that Philadelphia Flyers team. I can remember it's just a brief sort of glimmering moment in my head, sitting on my cousin's couch in Livonia, Michigan, watching the Stanley Cup final, the Philadelphia Flyers and the Boston Bruins. And then, you know, getting into hockey a couple of years later, as I got a little bit older, the Flyers were the team that terrified everybody. And as I got a little bit older and started to learn more about that Philadelphia Flyers team, it became fascinating. And the thing about that Philadelphia Flyers team, there was always a weird relationship between Philadelphia, their coach Fred Shiro, and Russia, and Anatoly Tarasov. And also, we all know what happened in 76 in that game between the Red Army and the Philadelphia Flyers as well. And Joe writes about all of this, that team, the Stanley Cups, that game, the incarceration, the Boreas Alming incident with Mel Bridgman, him hitting a cop on the shoulder with his stick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm very much looking forward to talking to Joe Watson. And if you're watching on 360, here is the book. It's called Thundermouth, Memories of a Broad Street Bully and NHL Lifer. Here's my fear. I think I'm losing my voice. So yesterday, I barely got through the podcast and woke up this morning, and yeah, it's not better. So, you know, Tom Waits once had the great line that his greatest fear was tapping the world on its shoulder, and when it finally turned around, he'd forget what he was going to say. So I have this fear that by the time we get to Joe Watson to kick off hour two of this program, and I've got a stack of things that I want to ask him about, I'm not going to have a voice to do it. So bear with me as I try to make sure I have some type of voice coming up in an hour or two. I have something left with my vocal cords that I can actually conduct an interview with someone that I've wanted to talk to for a long time. And again, like I have this thing, and I just pulled a couple out from the bookshelf behind me of books that I would recommend from that era and that team. Alan Bass's The Last Sports Mogul, which came out last year, the story of Ed Snyder, is excellent. Fred Shiro, The Man Behind the System, I recommend to everybody. And his inspiration was Anatoly Tarasov. In his book, Tarasov tells How to Win the Olympics, Road to Olympics is must read for all hockey fans. Also, the Reggie Leach book, My Story, The Riverton Rifle, highly encourage you to read that one. And this one's just fun and lets you know what 70s hockey was all about. Hockey Night Fever by Stephen Cole is fantastic. Mullets, mayhem, and the game's coming of age in the 70s. And with that, we will bring aboard Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. My voice so far is okay, Elliot. I was saying off the top before he came on, my big fear is I lose my voice right before Joe Watson joins the program, which I really hope doesn't happen, but I'm soldiering through. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing, bud?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there.
You're normally a very healthy guy.
No, I don't.
What's wrong with you?
First of all, I'm not sick. But every now and then, this happens. I don't know if this happens to you because, you know, you use your voice as your career. About once every couple of years, it just vanishes on me. And it happens for a couple of days, and then it goes away. Yet this isn't, like, sick. This is just my voice is going. Sounds like I'm in, you know, drinking scotch and eating cigars. But no, this is just the voice just disappears. I don't know what to do about it. It happens very infrequently. Again, like once every couple of years. But it's not sick. It's just the voice is going. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm buying this, Merrick. You seem like the guy who's full of a lot of diseases, I have to say.
I will be at the gym after we do our 32 Thoughts interview after this program goes out. Trust me, I am not. Did you already work out?
No, I'm going after it. I'm going after it.
Okay, let me ask you about a couple of things here. Now, I tweeted out a video from the Pittsburgh Penguins or Detroit Red Wings game last night. There was a lot in that game, and a lot of it revolved around Sidney Crosby, becomes a top 10 scorer of all time in the NHL, bumping out Phil Esposito in the process, 1,000 assists, scores goal number 41, has another signature brilliant game. Mm-hmm. And if you have a look at the video, and I've tweeted this out, folks, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter X, you look at the beginning of the overtime, he's sort of fiddling with his pants as Dylan Larkin is getting ready for the faceoff. Let me set the scene here. And as he fixes his pants and gets settled for the draw, he taps Dylan Larkin's stick as a way to get deliberately kicked out. And I think it's deliberate, kicked out of the faceoff circle. Rust comes in, and it looks like he deliberately loses the draw. Larkin pulls it back. Crosby jumps and gets the puck and gets position. I've looked at it so many times, and I come to the same conclusion every time. That is chess versus checkers. That is a Sidney Crosby, Brian Rust set play. Agree, disagree?
Oh, there's no question about it. No question about it. And, you know, another player I texted when I saw that video today, they said to me that normally, I said the emotion of the game kind of caught up with Larkin. And he's not blaming Larkin or anything like that. He said probably the same thing would have happened to him. Like, this is a game that Detroit absolutely has to have. And Larkin is bearing down to try to win it on overtime. Plus, it's Crosby. So he's got all these things going on in his head. And he said because that Crosby doesn't, like, you're not thinking that there's a situation where Crosby is intentionally going to get himself kicked out of the faceoff at the beginning of overtime. Yes. And he said, if Crosby would have done that to me, he would have said, that's weird. There's something up here. But what he admitted was, I don't know if I would have thought about it in that moment because there's a lot going on. But in a lot of situations, he would have thought that. Something's going on here because Crosby wouldn't get himself thrown out of a face-off like that. And it just shows the guy's genius.
Do you have a thought on the Pens from last night? Like, first of all, that's a, I know you were working the Leafs New Jersey game yesterday, but I'm sure you had an eye on Pittsburgh and Detroit, considering the implications of it. A wild game, a fun game, lead changes, gets to overtime. Carlson ends it with a howitzer of a slap shot, and now the Penguins find themselves in wild card two. And we have three teams that are tied with 85 points in the process. Do you have a thought on what we saw last night between the Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings? We'll start there.
Well, first of all, that was a heck of a game, incredibly entertaining. One of the best games of the night. There were a lot of good games last night. So to be probably the best game of the night is quite an honor, because there was a lot of good hockey. Detroit, I give them credit for getting the point. Pittsburgh kept on taking the lead. Detroit kept on fighting back.
Yep.
Lucas Raymond had a great game, a 4-point night for them. But Pittsburgh found their way. You know, like, Letang had a rough night, scored a huge goal. Carlson had a rough night, scored the winning goal. Crosby was Crosby. Those two goalies are carrying their teams. Nedeljkovic, that's 10 in a row for him. You know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Lyon, he's played a ton. He's saved their season. It's been a lot. The one thing, I can't remember which coach told me that, but about a player who's tired, and at this time of year, I remember the coach said, you can be tired tomorrow. Like, at this time of year, if they need you, they're calling your number. And, I can just see it. Like, they're riding hot streaks with these guys, and they're saying, if we lose a game that causes us to miss the playoffs, I don't want anyone to say to me, well, you didn't have your best lineup, or you didn't give yourself the best chance to win. And that's what I look at when I see these two coaches with their goalies.
So now we're looking at Pittsburgh and Detroit here. Detroit only has one way to get in, and that is wild card two. And the Penguins are 1 point up on them. Both teams have three games to play. Detroit faces off against Toronto on hockey night tomorrow. That's a massive game. And then a pair of games against the Montreal Canadiens. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow will face off against the Boston Bruins and then the Nashville Predators and the New York Islanders. That looks like a much tougher schedule, but at this time of the year, things happen. What I wonder about here with these two teams, I'm going to move off this in a sec. With these two teams, where will the consequences be biggest if they miss? Will it be Pittsburgh or will it be Detroit? Dubas or Yzerman?
Well, that's a great question. That is, like, Pittsburgh has already had, in a lot of ways, they had their big consequence, right? They didn't keep Gensel. I think that was a real earthquake through the organization. I don't think there's a person. I think a lot of those players believed it was going to be like Malkin and Letang 2 years ago. Lots of noise, lots of saber rattling, lots of hot air. But when it came down to it, they were going to stay. I think those players were shocked that Pittsburgh actually traded Gensel. And I think in some ways now, I think one of the things they're kind of looking at is, did this send such a thunderbolt through the organization that it shook off some of the inertia or the complacency? And it's hard to see anyone feeling complacent on a team with Sidney Crosby. But that is definitely one of the theories that's going on around there. Like, to me, I know people are talking about Mike Sullivan. I don't know. I think the only way that ends right now is if, everybody just sits here and says, it's time. That's the only, like, I don't see Kyle Dubas firing him. I don't see that. The only way I see it ending is if people just sit there and say, maybe it's just time and it's kind of a mutual agreement. But if they get in, you're probably not looking to do that. Detroit, I remember I came on and I talked about, for example, in Detroit, Kevin Allen, who's a really respected guy, and I would never question Kevin Allen, he came out and he said Lalonde might be in trouble if they don't make it. You know, like I don't like to dispute Kevin because he's been around a long time and he knows what he's talking about. The thing I always look at is the surest predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Steve Yzerman was very, very patient with Jeff Blashill. He's only had Lalonde for 2 years. And the one thing a few people have told me is that even this summer, like I've said that the Red Wings are a team that is being run like a group that expects or wants to make the playoffs because of all the veterans that they've signed to fill holes. People say that Yzerman felt before the year he wasn't sure that this was a playoff team. Like people would say, you got to make the playoffs this year, right? And apparently he would say, I'm not sure we're ready yet. And they're kind of proving his point. So I think to me, the biggest question now, you take a look at Yzerman signed Justin Hall, he's not playing. And so one of the things I wonder when it comes to that, Jeff, is, are the manager and the coach kind of on the same page? That's one of the things I look at. But his history is to be patient. And until he proves that that's not his history anymore, then I'm going to go on that side.
Okay. Elsewhere, there was a 15-minute buzz last night. It was fascinating. You know, I likened it back to, you know, Stamkos Day and, you know, the Taylor Hall trade and that, you know, that 15, 20 minutes of, you know, headline news. Philadelphia beats the New York Rangers 4-1. The Washington Capitals lose to the Buffalo Sabres 4-2. The Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Detroit Red Wings 6-5. And now we find ourselves in a situation where, as we've been talking about, Penguins are in wild card two. Washington's on the outside. Detroit's on the outside. And the Philadelphia Flyers are still not dead. They've only got two games left, one against New Jersey and one against the Washington Capitals. And boy, wouldn't it be something if it comes down to that final game. But what stood out to you in the other ones, the Washington-Buffalo game and the Philadelphia Ranger game?
Well, I'll say this. To me, the Islander game, when that game went into overtime, you know, obviously, like, the Islanders have to win. I know it's a stupid thing to say. It's a really dumb thing to say. But they don't have the tiebreaker against anybody. They can't catch anybody in the tiebreaker.
27 regulation wins.
Like, Pittsburgh's at 35, Washington's at 33, Detroit's at 36, Philly's at 33. They can't catch anybody. So I'm watching them last night, and they go into overtime. And sometimes you can say, okay, we got the point. I'm like, no. Like, they have to win this. They cannot. Losing that game was not an option there last night. And even when they got the 1 point. And so they did it, and I was like, you know, now you look at it, their odds are really improving. They look like they're going to squeeze in. But so that was the one thing that stood out to me. Like, look, they're, as you said, they've only got, they've got three games left. They're in a really good spot.
Yep.
Philly, I mean, it's just figures. They lose to all these teams below them in the standings, and then they go and they beat the Rangers.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was hilarious. And by the way, we should mention Philip Hedel cleared and back at practice today for the Rangers.
Yes.
That's massive for them. And even more importantly, good for him. You know, I got to say, this Detroit game tomorrow night, you know, Detroit-Toronto, there were a lot of times when we were growing up or in our young adult years, Jeff, where there were a lot of meaningful Detroit-Toronto games. It's great to see another one.
There were, and generally those games took about 3.5 to 4 hours, and that was in the Norris Division, where, as you can recall, if you had 65 points, you made it to the postseason. Thank you very much. But then again, you know, the Norris Division would sign, you know, would send teams to face off in the Stanley Cup Finals. See Chicago, see the Minnesota North Stars, but I digress. You mentioned the Maple Leafs, and the story there is, well, they lose to the New Jersey Devils last night. But the story coming out of it is a couple more goals for Austin Matthews. So he is now at 68. Of course, everybody wondering about 70. They're playing the Red Wings on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. And we'll finish up the season with a pair of games in Florida, one against the Panthers, one against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we're always thinking about rest here. If he stalls at 68, 69, do they play him against Tampa? Or do you think perhaps they look at Austin Matthews and say, if you don't have it, we don't want to sit you down, but you're only playing power play? How do you think they handle Matthews down the stretch here?
Well, the number one thing is he's going to want to do it. I don't think that should be seen as, oh, it's a personal goal over team. I don't think that that's what this is. I think it's simply a player who demands greatness and expects greatness of himself, wanting to do something that few people have done. And if you want him to try to be the best, he's going to say, okay, part of being the best is 70 goals. And I think they do recognize that about him. So I think they'll know that. Secondly, look, as you said, I think it depends on, where everything stands. The loss last night, basically, I mean, they're not done about getting second. They can still, catch Florida if, Florida has a nightmare end and they win out. But it's unlikely. So I think schedule matters, too. They've got a back-to-back, and I think it looks like they're going to play next Saturday. So they're going to play Tuesday and Wednesday. Not exactly a tough road trip, Florida-Tampa, in terms of travel. And then they're going to have a couple days off, and they might be down there anyway. If they're playing the Panthers, they're going to be right there. So I think the travel's easy. The only way I see him agreeing to any kind of rest is if he's already there. That's the only way I can see
right.
it. If he's at 70 before then. Heck, the way he's going, Jeff, he might be at 72 Saturday night. And then all of this is moot.
Yeah. Correct. A couple of moments left with you here. I want to get a couple of things in. One is Arizona. And the feedback initially that I've received from the podcast that came out this morning, the two main topics, one, garbage plates, and the other is how we handle the Arizona Coyotes and talking about whether it's trust for the owner or upset players. This is like, put it this way, just to be blunt, a lot of pissed off people in that organization and kind of feel duped, feel like they had the rug pulled from out under them. Now, those people have not commented publicly, and mostly we think of the players. At what point do you think we start to hear how, because it's going to happen. Like right away, the initial knee-jerk reaction in hockey is protect, 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 and don't say anything. And we know how, the Arizona Coyotes have had, closed doors for the media. Get it. Do you anticipate, though, in the next few days, or maybe it's going to take until next Wednesday, and then afterwards, we start to hear people talk about how upset, disgruntled, how duped they felt and feel about Alex Morello?
Well, I think it'll probably come after, should they close the sale? I think it'll come there, or maybe when they finish their season next week. I think one of the things that's going on is that Andre Tourneau has sort of taken the role of I'm going to speak up a little here. There was with Todd Walsh before they played Vancouver on Wednesday. He talked about it a little bit. There was a radio hit he did yesterday locally in Arizona where he did a little bit. And I have heard that internally he has made his feelings known. And I think the players and the staff have been aware of that Tourneau has kind of taken the responsibility on himself. He's got a contract. He's a bit more secure than some other guys. But I also think, it's not only that. I think he also just feels, judging from the way he's talking, he feels like a lot of other people that this has been very poorly handled, and people deserve to have a better idea of what's really going on. And not only has he said some things publicly, but I understand, and particularly yesterday, as they were en route to Edmonton from Vancouver, he made some statements privately in support. I think he basically asked, where's the information? And people deserve to have information. They deserve to know what's going on. And I've heard that it's been hugely appreciated that Tournier, both publicly and privately, has made it very clear that he doesn't believe that people are being treated fairly here.
Is there anything new today? Is there anything we should expect for the weekend from this story? Or is this just marching towards closing a sale here?
I don't expect any new information today. I could always be wrong. Jeff, what do we know about this story? It never unfolds as you would expect. Oh, yeah. But I'm not I don't think the sale is going to be done this weekend or anything like that. I still think there is some hope that they can do it for when they're around the time Arizona season ends next week, but I don't know I don't know that for sure. Look, the sense I get is that it's farther along than they would like to admit, but I know why they don't want to admit it. In the legal world, which we are not smart enough to enter, nothing is done until it's done, right? So things like momentum, they don't matter. Momentum matters to us. It's pushing towards a goal. But in the legal world, they say, is it done? Yes or no? Yes, it's done. Great. No, it's not done. Well, then it doesn't matter if it's 98% done or 72% done or 37% done. It's not done. And that's the way it is right now, although I do believe that they're probably farther along than they want to admit.
Okay, we will see what happens. Arizona in action tonight against the Edmonton Oilers, where we will wonder about Connor McDavid, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. I want to ask you.
Send some video.
Yeah. What are your spidey senses feel about Connor McDavid? I mean, obviously chasing 100 assists here. How are we feeling about Connor McDavid today?
Well, we were talking about Matthews, he's going to want to play. You know what I would do? I would say, Connor, pick a game this weekend. You want to play tonight? You want to play tomorrow? Pick one.
Yeah, he would say both.
Yeah, I know what he would say, but that's why I say pick one.
Okay, we'll see what happens with McDavid, the Oilers, and the Arizona Coyotes tonight. Mentioned off the top of the show, very much looking forward to talking to Joe Watson. Now, Joe Watson was a big part of that Philadelphia Flyers team that won the Stanley Cup in 74-75. Some of my earliest hockey memories are watching the Flyers. I mentioned off the top of the show, sitting on my cousin's couch in Livonia, Michigan. Must have been my first hockey memory, Flyers and Boston Bruins Stanley Cup final. When you think of, I don't know, maybe you have a thought on Joe Watson himself, or you have a thought on that Philadelphia Flyers team itself that won back-to-back Stanley Cups, what comes to your mind? You and I are the same vintage. This is right around the time that you and I are starting to clue into this thing called hockey and who these teams are and how the game is played and who all these characters are on the ice. But how do you feel about that Flyers team now, or Joe Watson, or anything involving that team from that era?
Well, one of the first hockey games I remember watching is the game from the against the Russian team. They're going home, Bob Cole. Mm. They're going home.
Yeah.
And look, it was a different era. I loved it back then. I also remember, that's where I also gained my love for Boreas Salming, right? Because they manhandled him, and he came back and he scored big goals against them. Came back the next game and scored a big goal. So that's where I really gained my love for Salming, too. But I don't know. It was a different age. I couldn't imagine what it would be like if Twitter existed when the Broad Street Bullies were at their zenith. All of our brains would have melted.
I'll tell you, the conspiracy theories about officials like Art Scove or Lloyd Gilmore and the Philadelphia Flyers, if you think it's bad now with the way people handle officials, could you imagine if there was social media when the Flyers were winning cups? And I mean, listen, I remember talking to Emil the Cat Francis, who was just like, look, we all believe that they had Art Scove in the bag, in their hip pocket, and all of the games, like all there's that game 7 against the Rangers with Dave Schultz and Dale Rolfe, you know, Art Scove was the official in that game, and the linesman didn't go in to stop that beating. And remember the last time I spoke to Emil the Cat Francis before he passed away, he said, like, it's not a coincidence that Scove didn't send the linesman in. The Rangers fully believed that Art Scove was, you know, very much favoriting the Philadelphia Flyers for whatever reason. We'll see if we get there with Joe Watson coming up at the top of the hour. Looking forward to this interview. Okay, enjoy the rest of your day.
Before we go, still on Lane Hudson watch. I think it's much more likely than not it's going to happen. Still waiting for the official announcement.
I'll tell you what, Montreal's got a lot of reasons to be excited here with this tournament and the players. There's Lane Hudson and then Jacob Fowler, who's a third-round pick of the Montreal Canadiens. He has been outstanding, you know, maybe the best goaltender in all of college hockey. So it's good to be a Habs fan today from that point of view, despite the loss last night in overtime against the Islanders. Thanks, Frege. We'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. Take care.